Hello, everybody. This is the Psych Files. I'm Michael Britt here, and this is episode 146. Well, hello again, and welcome, and thanks for coming back to have a listen to the Psych Files, where we delve into your mind and try to see what's going on in there. So today's episode is about a borderline personality disorder. It happens to be May is a mental health month, and also Borderline Personality Awareness Month. I haven't talked about this particular personality disorder before, and I came across a really interesting article which talks a little bit about it, did some really neat research using some very relatively new technology. I wanted to also kind of expand on that and explore a little bit about how, even in the past 2 or 3 years, the technology has changed so much that I think what they did in this research is neat, but what we'll be able to do, given the power of our mobile devices, for both a better understanding human behavior, personality, disorders, but also possibly treating them as well. So if you can imagine being treated through your mobile device, that's a pretty neat idea, I think. Okay, so that's where we're going to go. And I also have a couple of announcements to make at the end about the podcast and maybe a question to ask you. So if you want to hang in there for that, that'd be great too. Okay, so let me dive in. What is borderline personality disorder? Often abbreviated as BPD and sometimes confused with bipolar disorder, but no, BPD is for borderline personality disorder. So what is that? If you never heard of that term before, a couple of things really typify people who are suffering from this disorder. And that would be, and I just happen to have the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual for Mental Disorders in front of me here. And I'll give you a couple of the definitions from there. Primarily, unstable emotions are one thing, and particularly prone to very intense feelings of anger. So let me read you some of these. Instability in their interpersonal relationships, which, as you can imagine, easily results from that kind of intense emotions. Impulsivity. But let's see, here's one. Frantic efforts to avoid real or imagined abandonment. So there's a real fear of being abandoned, which tends to kick off these intense emotions. Another one here. A pattern of unstable and intense interpersonal relationships characterized by alternating between extremes of idealization and devaluation, so idealizing their partner and also putting their partner down. An unstable self-image, right? Sometimes they feel good about themselves, sometimes they feel bad about themselves. It's not bipolar, though. Again, this is how you evaluate yourself. Feelings of emptiness. You can see that there's a mix of emotions here, a mix of, even in this description here. But what they call affective instability due to a marked reactivity of mood. So real extremes in the emotions, great sensitivity to possibly being rejected, and unstable relationships as a part of all of this. So I'm going to have on the website a number of videos on YouTube. There are some that in which people explain what it's like to have this disorder, because it is hard to describe. And but there's some really neat sites for you to look at. How do we get a better understanding of these people and what their daily lives are like? And that is what this study looked at. It's called the Rejection Rage Contingency in Borderline Personality Disorder. So they're going to look particularly at this issue of rejection or perceived rejection and how that leads to these intense feelings, particularly of rage. And the key researchers here are Kathy Berenson and Geraldine Downey. They're from Columbia University, Eshkol Rafaeli, Barnard College, Columbia University, and Bar-Lan University. And Karen Koifman and Nina Leventhal-Paquin from Columbia University. So what do they do? And why is this particular study really neat? Okay. Well, they did a couple of different things. But again, let me go in here. One was a laboratory study, and one was out there in the real world. So most psychology students learn about basic and applied research, and this is along those lines. So they really were interested in particular, this issue of rejection. And so there is this rejection sensitivity model that they are in particular looking at. And so some of what they say about that model is that experiences of rejection, quote, including all perceived acts and communication regarding rejection, leads individuals to develop a disposition to anxiously expect rejection in the future. So there's a certain self-fulfilling prophecy to all this as well. So these sufferers expect rejection, and to a certain extent that comes out for them. Quote, when highly rejection-sensitive individuals encounter cues that they have learned to associate with rejection, their anxious expectations for rejection become activated, triggering both processing biases, and by that they mean they start to interpret something which might be quite neutral. In other words, someone might say something to them which is they didn't really mean anything in particular about it, but it contained the certain words, the words here being cues or facial expressions, which sort of kick off in this person's head that rejection is coming. And so these are activated, triggering these thoughts and feelings and intense reactions that strain their capacity for self-regulation. In other words, they can't control how they act because of these very, very strong feelings. Now, I've never worked with someone with borderline personality, but years ago I worked with people with schizophrenia, and one person in particular had paranoid schizophrenia. And it was fascinating to work with him because we toss the word paranoia around, you know, that person's paranoid or something like that. But to work with someone who actually does have this sense of paranoia, it was really a fascinating experience. And because he didn't walk around thinking that everybody was after him, you know, that stereotype. But he did have an exaggerated sense that other people were thinking about him and perhaps didn't like him. And he did have a tendency to interpret things that people said as being negative about him. And I remember one time in particular, he had gone to a store to get some groceries and came back. On his way back, there were a couple of teenagers, and they were hanging out, you know, talking to each other. And he, as he passed them, he interpreted that they were talking about him, and he said something to them to that effect. And, it was inappropriate. It just didn't match what was going on. And so they ended up actually they said some things to him and followed him for a little bit, you know, nothing really happened, but enough that, you know, I mean, it was a little bit upsetting to him, understandably, but he kind of brought the situation about by saying something that just didn't fit. It was sort of weird to them and funny in a way to them. You know, they didn't know who he was or that he had this kind of disorder. And so that's where you get that sort of self-fulfilling prophecy coming about there when you're just not interpreting what's happening around you in realistic ways. Okay, so what did they do in this study? As I said, lab and in the real world. What did they do in the lab? Well, kind of interesting. They call it a sequential priming pronunciation paradigm. So there you go. That's what it's called. But what does that mean? And this, you got to get dig in here to figure out exactly what they did. So a priming pronunciation paradigm. So what they did was this. The idea is you sit down in the lab. So they were able to get a group of, let me just get their participants here. They had a, through advertisements in newspapers, and in mental health centers, they were able to get a group of about 45 individuals who suffered from borderline personality disorder, and then a group of about 40 who were considered controls. So imagine yourself, maybe one of the controls. You come in, and you sit down in front of a computer. This is the laboratory part of it. Now, their hypothesis is that people with borderline personality disorder are particularly sensitive to rejection, right? Okay, well, what are the words that people use when they, you know, are rejecting someone? Well, they chose some words, and here they are. There are the words abandon, betray, exclude, ignore, leave, and reject, right? Those are all words associated with rejection. What are some words associated with the feeling of rage? Well, of course, the word rage itself, just like reject, but also anger, hit, hurt, revenge, and slap. Okay. All right. Those are rage words. And then there were some neutral words such as chalk, dress, map, board. Okay, as B-O-A-R-D. Okay, so you're going to sit down, and what you're going to see is they're going to say to you that you're going to see some words in the center of the screen, and when you see them, please pronounce them out loud into the microphone. Now, you're also going to see some words around the above and below this word in the center, but we want you to disregard those. Don't become distracted by them, and simply say the word that you see in the middle of the screen. Well, the words that were above and below and were flashed at the subject were, in some cases, words like the rejection words, abandon, exclude. And right after that, in some cases, there were words like, in the middle, like anger and revenge. And other times there were neutral words. So imagine this situation. What they're expecting is this. If you have borderline personality disorder and a word flashes just a little bit out of your range of view, a word like abandon, now that's a cue for rejection. And when you see a word, the word that comes up in the middle, like revenge, you're going to say that word quickly. Because it's been cued, right? It's been kicked off in your head. Words like reject and abandon and betray. If you don't have a borderline personality disorder and you see the word exclude, and then you see a word like reject, you would pronounce it, but you wouldn't pronounce it as quickly. So that's what they're measuring. That's the dependent variable in this case is really the speed with which, or the, you know, the amount of time between the cue word and the pronunciation of the word. And that's exactly what they found, that borderline personality disorder and controls didn't differ at all if the words really didn't have any connection to the feeling of rejection. So I mentioned to you some of the neutral words like chalk. So if chalk flashes above or below, and then the word, could be another neutral word like build, or there was another neutral word here, dress. Okay, so they didn't differ if the words were neutral. So if you saw chalk and then you saw dress, there was no difference in the time there to pronounce the word. But when the cue word was one of these rejection terms, then those with borderline personality were very quick to pronounce the next word if it expressed rage. All right, an interesting way to kind of to find out in a laboratory setting whether or not there's something to this rejection rage model here. Are they primed to respond with that feeling of rage. Okay, but you might, understandably, and I know you because you're out there and you're thinking, okay, that's a laboratory situation. Interesting. But what about real world? So how do you do this in the real world? Well, you don't use that, what is it called again? Sequential priming pronunciation paradigm. You go out and you use what's called an experience sampling technique. So, some of these are pretty low-tech and have been low-tech. We'll get to the higher-tech in just a second. Low-tech experience sampling just means that you carry around with you a diary, not just a book, you know, some pages in it, and at various random points during the day, very low-tech would be that someone calls you and says, okay, you know, write down what you're feeling right now. And this technique of randomly writing down what it is you're thinking and feeling, this has been used to study all kinds of things, including happiness. Yeah, so if you write down, well, I was thinking about work, you know, what a lot of people do maybe, or they were, if it happens to you at 7 o'clock at night and you're thinking, well, I was thinking about this movie I just saw, and okay, now how are you feeling? Well, I was feeling this way. So there's a connection or an attempt to find a connection between what's going on in your life and how you feel about it. So in this situation then, with the experience sampling, they used good old palm, what do they call those? Palm Pilots, those things, you know, it's unfortunate, but I guess they just don't exist anymore. Right, there's those good old Palm Pilots, they didn't have the smartphones that we have today. So what they, the PDAs, that's what they call them. Okay, wow, wait, that word is gone from my brain. So, quote, the program that they put on the PDA, it's called, actually, you can find it if you want, at www.experience-sampling.org. But I'm going to get you some different ones because that's, as you'll see, I mean, it's sort of, the site looks about as old as the PDA, you know, the Palm Pilot does. But you can see how it works if you go there. So there's that. So just a little bit of a quote here on how they did this. They gave them the PDAs. They put this program on there, this experience sampling program. And, quote, the program divided the waking hours that the participant had identified. In other words, I'm awake between, you know, 6 and 10, into 5 equal intervals and scheduled a prompt to occur at randomly selected points. The prompt consisted of an audible beep, followed by a reminder beep every 15 seconds, until the participant began to complete his or her diary. So, you know, you had to take the stylus out and you had to start. You answered questions. Some of them were little taps, and others were typing things out. Until the participant began to complete his or her diary, or had missed the opportunity to complete it by not responding within 10 minutes. So the beeping went off every 15 seconds for 10 minutes and then stopped finally. I guess that would be, you know, maybe you had left your PDA in the car or something, so you missed that one. Otherwise, obviously the reminder would get to you after a while and you'd fill it out. Did this for 21 days, asking them a variety of questions about what, in fact, let me see if I have some of these right here. What are you, let's see, whoops, here I am. Okay, so you would either agree or disagree to some typical Likert scale type things, such as, quote, I am accepted by others, and that would, I feel abandoned, I am rejected by others, my needs are being met. Okay, so that's the kind of it's the assessment of whether right now you have a feeling of being, you feeling like maybe you're rejected. Okay, so a 5-point scale, you know, not at all to extremely. And you also answer other questions like to get your mood. Right now, to what extent do you feel the following? And 4 items were listed. Irritated, angry, I feel like lashing out, I feel enraged at someone. So they're looking for that, you know, that correlation between sense of rejection and your mood at the time. And obviously, it wouldn't be discussing this if they didn't actually come out with that. The results, some of the results over the entire diary period, which I think we said was 21 days, The borderline personality disorder group reported higher mean levels of perceived rejection. So they, as we said before with that self-fulfilling thing, they sensed rejection in their lives significantly more often than did the control group. So they're either interpreting events around them as meaning rejection, or like I said before, they're doing something and actually kind of the self-fulfilling prophecy thing. Borderline personality group also reported higher mean levels of rage feelings. So they were angrier as a whole during those 21 days than the control group. Quote, an increase in perceived rejection was associated with a significantly greater increase in the momentary rage feelings. And there you have it. So very good support for the research, and an interesting way, I think, to carry it out, to carry around, in this case, the PDAs. All right, so an interesting insight into borderline personality. But as I read it, and I contacted the author, and she agreed that now that we have these smarter mobile devices, think about the kinds of things that they could do now, probably will do now, given the capabilities of your mobile phone. So, for example, obviously they can be programmed to go off at random times, but they can be connected, let's say, to, you know, through some strings, right? I don't know if any of you have ever had any heart problems. Hopefully not many of you, but you know that a lot of the people who do can carry around these devices for a day, and they have the little wires that are connected to their chest. Well, those are pretty unobtrusive, and so what could happen is instead of just self-reports, I mean, it is self-report. In other words, a little beeper goes off, but you mark down, well, I feel this way, or I feel that way, or I feel. Well, what if we were able to grab at those times when it beeps and you click it, and you while you're doing something else, it's grabbing your heart rate. It could be grabbing your galvanic skin response. In other words, how much are you sweating at the time? We all of our phones, as we know, have GPS, so it could also grab exactly where you are, or well, close to exactly where you are. So I don't know exactly how that information would be used, but we know where you are. Maybe you're at work or you're at home. That's somewhat interesting. It could, imagine this, I mean, your device can record audio. So what if it comes on at random times during the day and records what is happening around you? So now this has, of course, some ethical issues, because if you're at work and your phone goes off and it records for let's say 10 minutes, maybe it comes on, maybe the audio comes on, let's say, 5 minutes before the beep and stays on 5 minutes after the beep. So now we're not depending on you writing down, well, my coworker just said this to me, and I felt this way afterwards. But we'd actually have the audio from that experience. Now, of course, I mean, sometimes a coworker could say something to you an hour ago, and it's an hour later, and you're thinking about it. But so, you know, no method's going to be perfect. But it would be interesting, given that we handle the ethical concerns about it. We could rely less upon what you say is happening and more upon what is being actually recorded. I mean, you could even record video on these things, as you know. But there's a lot in the tone of voice. So in other words, someone could write down, my boss said that he liked my report. And how do you feel right now? I feel a little, sad, or I feel a little angry. And there might not be any connection between that, but as you know, we communicate so much in the way that we say things. And the boss could have said, well, Bill, I liked your report, right? I mean, the words and the way that we say them, two different things. So it would be really add much more richness to understanding borderline personality disorder and others if we were maybe tap into some of these capabilities of your phone. I don't know if you want to think of your phone being used in those ways. So much is coming out about, wow, they're so powerful, and in some cases it's a little bit scary. So I don't know. Feel free to email me at any time, Michael@thepsychfiles.com. Okay, see you next time. Take care.